Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly Hanley.
You guys are ignorant and you're also naive.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score, Chicago's sports station.
It is time for Game 5 of the National League Championship Series. Bellinger lines a base hit down the right field line. It's going to bounce off the sidewall. Chasing it down is Zobrist. Racing toward third, Taylor. He's going to try to score. Baez will throw to the plate. The slide. He scores. Here's a deep drive to left center. Off the bat of Hernandez. Back toward the wall. And this ball is gone. Turner hits a drive into right center field. That's going to be a base hit. This will drive in a run. Base is loaded. The pitch to the right-handed batter. He drives one to the gap in right center. That is back toward the wall, and that is going to be a grand slam. A grand slam home run for Kike Hernandez. And just like that, the Dodgers lead 7-0. A 2-0 by Montgomery. Here's a drive into deep left center field. Back toward the wall is Almora. Can you believe it? His third home run of the game. Kike Hernandez with three home runs and seven RBIs. And the Dodgers now lead 11-1, and the Dodgers are World Series bound.
Mully and Hanley.
Fruit and toot and fruit and.
I'm Ragnar. Pay me.
That's how I roll, buddy.
Start your day with the teams you know.
The better team won over the course of these five games. They played really well, kind of outpitched us and everything else. So give them credit.
It wasn't our year this year. I mean, pretty impressive, though, to make three NLCS in a row.
It definitely stings.
Mully. Hanley.
This is all tricky.
Here we go! Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to The Score. Well, that was an ugly one, buddy.
Hey, at least Chris Bryant got off the schneid.
He did hit a homer.
Because that's what the Cubs, if they're scoring, they're homering.
They were down 9-0, but they did hit one.
Well, you could have hoped for a little bit better.
So, feelings?
Well.
Yeah.
As Quintana was getting beat up early there, I was thinking, boy, Dustin, talk about conflicted. You wanted to be wrong about a guy, and last night, you weren't wrong about the guy for that moment.
But he was pretty wrong about the guy all said. Yeah. I mean, he didn't have it in that game.
No one did. No one did in this series.
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd the bullpen do?
Exactly.
With that,
how'd anyone do, really?
It's hard to find anyone.
Yeah, at least you didn't. At least it was close. No. No. They've got some work to do. It was interesting hearing Theo on The Score yesterday before the game, even talking about different things that they need to address, and they're aware. But October baseball. If you can take this for granted, then they've changed they've changed everything, right? You're disappointed because
They're not lovable losers anymore.
No. Right? Now there's a different standard.
You can bury that one.
As people were heading out of Wrigley Field in the fourth inning saying, I guess we'll try it again next year. I mean, when you get to that point where you feel that comfortable that these playoff games are so routine, I'll beat traffic. Yeah. I'll get out of here. See you later.
Yeah, it was, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but it was never really a game, was it?
They were scoring
a run every inning, and then boom, went the dynamite. So, you never really felt like the Cubs were in that game.
No, you never felt like they were in that series, and they certainly weren't in that game because even at 3-0, you just know that this offense was going to be very challenged to come up with four.
Oh, it seemed especially, Kershaw rested on the bump, and you're down three.
And I'm screaming, you got to get him out of there.
Two was too many to
right,
be honest with
I,
you.
Right, got to get Q out of there, got to get Q out of there. Oh, Rondon? Yeah, well, maybe you don't have to get him out of there.
Yeah.
But the bases are juiced, nobody out. And I Rondon again didn't make the playoff roster of the first series. Didn't meet the moment in the pivotal game of the weekend. And here we go, hand them the ball, and you knew bad things were going to happen, and bad things happened.
Yeah, you didn't have a good feel about it.
No,
and there was blood in the water, and the Dodgers could sense it too. And they didn't want to.
Kike Hernandez. I mean, boy, oh boy.
Wow. How about that?
That game alone,
home runs.
He split. You know, Justin Turner's probably ticked off because he had the NLCS MVP wrapped up until last night, and they had a split. They gave him a co MVP. I was like, what the hell? I did all the heavy lifting, and this guy gets style points.
He had a game. He didn't have a series.
Yeah, he had I mean, come on now. Three home runs, a grand slam.
It's hard to believe it's over.
It really is.
That's always the thing about playoff baseball.
It's just emptiness.
And, you know, a bad call, something goes wrong, and then a different team is starting a series. And it's really
because what, for 38 hours or so, at least Cub fans, like you're trying to build the case you're at least getting back to L.A.
Was some optimism
yesterday. Yeah, in the postgame we were talking, you know, you said, well, what do you think? I said, well, I think they're going to get back to L.A. I don't think they'll win the series, but I think they're going back to L.A., which makes it interesting because now the Dodgers have to have a little doubt about what's going on here. But boy, oh boy, by the third inning, you're like, yeah, maybe not.
No, that was
– maybe
it was
I was –
over early, yeah, no question
maybe
about
I
it.
Was sorely mistaken.
Yeah,
when it came to figure out what they were going to do. But it was a tough team to figure out all along.
Yeah, it was a very strange season, and we'll talk about whether it was a successful one or not in the 5-5. But I would say that perspective is needed sometimes, right? I mean, to get to three consecutive NLCS is pretty extraordinary, and it's not something.
Think about where you were 4 years, 5 years ago, and you're thinking, okay, you've been promised a one World Series in your lifetime, you get that, but now sustained success seemingly is here and here to stay. Doesn't mean that they don't have, again, work to do, but you trust that the powers that be and Theo and Jed will get it together and their staff and figure things out, and we'll see how committed ownership is to improving things. So
I mean, listen, there's a lot, as you say, there's a lot to do. We'll go over off-season wish lists and checklists and all that stuff. We'll get into it as we move forward here, but you know, you also kind of have to appreciate what was a slog of a season and getting to the point that they got to and getting through the Nationals. And I mean, it's, you know, these are very young players still. The majority of your field position players are still not quite in their prime. So who knows what that's going to look like as you move forward. But certainly there's a lot of good players on the roster. There's work to be done in different places, as we said. But, you know, it's a real accomplishment to do what they've done. You know, not many teams get back to the playoffs. Not many teams win a World Series, then win their division and get back into the playoffs. And I understand that this series has been a lopsided one, and I'm sure there's a lot of disappointment. It's somewhat like the losing in 2015, where you know, you really thought, oh, here they go, this is it, wow, this team arrived early, and then you run into kind of a buzzsaw. The Dodgers team had an unbelievable year. We're headed to the greatest record of all time before they lapsed and fell apart for a while, but they sure look like the team they were earlier in the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're getting a lot of contributions from all over the place, and the pitching was great. And, you know, they were – Joe said it, the better team won.
The better team won, and that's going to also be an impetus to get better and to do whatever it takes, because you look at the Dodgers, whether they win the World Series or not, they're not going anywhere. That also is a young group of guys, and also a big time organization with big resources. And you look at the Nationals, and they'll figure out, you know, who the next manager is and how they're going to get their stuff together. And their window probably closing a little bit quicker, but they've got another couple years to press through and maybe get through. So it's not like, well, you could just sit back and say it wasn't our season, we don't have to do anything, because look around the league, there are teams you're going to have to at least stay in stride with, let alone, you know, try to get by. So,
and who is it? The Yankees lead right now. The Astros on the other side of the bracket. But I don't know who's saying it. The Yankees would be the second highest payroll in the World Series. So it's not often you'd say something like that.
Yeah,
but the Dodgers are spending piles and piles of money and have spent piles and piles of money. And, you know, you can't be afraid to spend your pile, too.
Well, how about that? Justin Turner gave him a discount to stick around. I mean, that's how much guys want to be part of that, just like, you know, seemingly guys want to be part of the Cubs now.
Yeah, Jason Hayward gave him a discount to come here.
Help.
He did, didn't he? Wasn't Hayward more...
There was more money. I think St. Louis offered more money, yeah, but he wanted to be a part of a younger core.
Right. He didn't want to be a part of the ARP group, as he said.
Right. He needed people to...
He needed contemporaries. He
needed people around him.
On the bench?
No, I'm saying other players.
Yeah. You know, right? Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see. We'll see if they're looking for hometown discounts this time around, or if they're going to be ponying up to the bar with lots of money.
It'll be very interesting because there's a couple of big questions involved in that. All right, the world turns on and the Bears are working out and getting a game plan in for the Panthers and the Raiders over the Chiefs. What a desperate moment for the Raiders! They really needed that game and. And they ended up winning it 31-30. David Carr hits Crabtree in the final moments for the go-ahead score. It's really a game they had to have the way their season's gone. They'd lost a couple.
Did you see how that ended?
Diego.
Three consecutive penalties. You had an offensive pass interference and two defensive holdings in the end zone. So you had all these untimed downs, and they finally broke through to get the tying score and then the PAT.
The Blackhawks... fall in overtime 2-1. Kaner with the lone goal. And of course, the Bulls drop the season opener, but do score 100 points. Why are you laughing?
Because the
what was the over under of the Bulls?
But the second quarter started, 15-0, 22-2.
Yeah.
And then find like 34-14. I mean, did you see that lineup they started the second quarter with?
Your guy, Lauri Markkanen, had 17 points and 8 rebounds in his NBA debut.
Wow.
You've been touting him as the next Dirk, and here you go.
Is he my guy?
I thought you were touting him as the next Dirk.
I got to put him on the list. I wasn't aware.
I remember hearing you call him the next Dirk, Brian.
Yeah.
I remember that pretty vividly.
Everyone remembers
I believe
that, right?
I think I called him the next Zipser. Okay, I'll put him on the list.
Well, it was some German player.
Yeah.
I don't remember who.
I must have not been in the meeting where I got the guy. But
he's your guy. You claimed him.
All right. Well, better than Quincy Pondexter.
He didn't play in the preseason.
But
that's what happens when you have a couple guys.
He played in the first 10 minutes of the second quarter.
Well, yeah.
While he was there. I don't know if he actually played.
All right. We are going to get to the 5 at 5 next. We'll answer the crucial questions about the Cubs' future, and you'll hear it next. Mully and Haley on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hanley. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hanley starts now.
Should this season be considered a success or a disappointment for the Cubs?
I think it's a success. I think to be able to do something that teams normally don't do, which is to win your division after a long playoff run, and to not only get into the playoffs but to win a playoff series, that's pretty successful. There's a lot of years Cub fans would have dreamt of that kind of a season. So, yeah, I can't sit here and tell you that it's it's World Series or bust, because there's been one in how many years? I mean, that's insane. There's more that goes into a season. I thought they had a pretty good year, all things told. So not a disappointment to me.
Yeah, it's all about perspective, and that's tough to do in the aftermath of a series where you absolutely got dominated in a game where you absolutely got your butt kicked from start to finish. And no one can sit there and say, boy, I had a good game. I had a great series. And so it's disappointing, and there's an empty feeling. And I guess it's great to be able to still have the emotions where watching the Dodgers getting their team picture taken on the mound yesterday in the postgame really bothered me. I mean, think of that. In my lifetime, I never thought, because the Cubs were the lovable losers and were never going to be close, that such a victory celebration on your team's home field would resonate. But it did. I mean, it really is like, wow. Really, it just seems like last year was 10 years ago. And that's the wrong thing to feel right now, because the October baseball is an annual event now. And they promised it, Theo and Jed and the Ricketts, Tom Ricketts, and everyone promised that was the goal. And they've reached the goal, and they're going to sustain that goal. I truly believe that. So to be able to feel all the different emotions that October baseball brings, it's a terrific thing. And so even though there's an emptiness and you know, just what we, you know, what could have been, what should have been, what might have been, even a week ago when we're rehashing and dissecting games one and two, I mean, to think that I would see this kind of success in getting to an NLCS three consecutive seasons in a sport where you don't see that happen for any team, let alone the Cubs, it's absolutely a success. It's not where the bar should be set or is set. It's still about winning the damn thing. And so, I mean, there's that. But if you look at this and say, man, am I disappointed in everyone or anyone, something's wrong.
100% success. No question about it. I think it's so ridiculous when some people say, this season is a failure unless you win the championship. That is the goal. Well, obviously, that's the goal. Everybody wants to win. So every team in every sport, aside from one, is a failure if they're not the last team standing at the very end. You know, it's nice when executives say that into a microphone to fire up the fan base, but, I mean, come on. You're allowed to have success when you're not the last team standing. They finished with 92 wins when they were 5.5 back at the All-Star break in a very down division, arguably the worst in all of baseball. They made the Final Four for the third straight year. And if you're being realistic, you looked at all the holes this team had, and then the Dodgers, I don't know. They didn't have their best player, and I don't know where their holes are with their team. The most important thing, starting pitching, a strong bullpen, they have it when it comes to playoff baseball. So, yeah, it certainly was a success.
I'd have to call it a success as well. A third straight 90-win season, third straight trip to the league championship series. We talked about how difficult it was going to be to repeat as World Series champs all year. Hasn't been done since the Yankees, right, in the late 90s / early 2000s, and it's a completely different game now than it was even then. What with starting pitchers not going deep into ball games as you used to see, and it becoming more of a bullpen game and more of a chess match, I think you could say, in terms of managerial moves. But I think a lot of the outcry from the fans that would call it a disappointment, it does speak to how spoiled I think that a lot of them have become. Brian, you mentioned a lot of people filing out of that game early last night. Who would have expected that Cubs fans, you know, so beleaguered and deprived of success for all these years, leaving a National League Championship Series game that early?
It was a year ago, think about what people were doing just to get in the ballpark for a game in any round, any playoff ticket you could get your hands on, waiting in line 3 hours, trying to be all your expendable income to find a ticket or two for one game. And now we're getting to the point where I don't know if it's jaded, but don't worry, we'll be back next year. And this one was, you know, we were never really in it. Let's go. It's the fourth inning.
Didn't you feel that before last night?
Yes.
Kind of taking everything for granted?
Well, there was, you know, it's, even around Wrigley Field, there was no real pre or post game buzz after those games. People weren't hanging out. They weren't trying to drink in the moment of the one win the other night. It was like, all right, let's go home. And maybe that's an older crowd, a more well-heeled crowd. Maybe it's a byproduct of
more
an 8 o'clock start.
More well-paid crowd, I think it was.
Yeah.
Older.
Yeah, older and late night, whatever. So, but yeah, there was a sense of, okay, we've been there, done that, we'll be there again. So there certainly wasn't the same, God, I got to be part of this, like it was last year.
I know we're not asking for a grade, but I don't know that you can say it's a success or it's definitely a dis. How can you not? We didn't say failure. It says disappointment. I don't know how you couldn't be disappointed. The game ended how long ago? 8 hours ago? I mean, how could you be, oh, yeah, well, they made it to three NLCS. I mean, this is the group that this division stunk, and the only reason they got there is because they didn't play anybody.
That's true.
Blah, 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 blah. I mean, that's what this group that cheerleaded all during the regular
season.
It's true.
The division was terrible. Okay. They played the Reds 78 times.
So they stunk, and they were lucky to get there, and yada, yada, yada. So how can you say this morning that, oh, yeah, it was a success?
It's really because we're talking about the entirety of the season. When they were 5.5 back at the All-Star break, there was a real good chance they weren't getting to the playoffs. I mean, it was division or bust, and at that point you wondered what exactly what the hell was going on and how they were going to win the division, get back to the playoffs. So in its entirety, they did win the division. They got to the NLCS, so I'm standing by my answer that it was a success.
I'll give them a solid C on the season. That's what they get. They get a solid C. I'm not ready to be all, let's look at the future. I want to look at last night. I mean, how in the world can we defend what Quintana did in that game? It wasn't his fault. Two innings, six runs, six hits,
well,
one walk, one strikeout, lots of hard contact.
A guy came on and gave up a grand slam, right?
Listen,
where three of the runs came from. Just saying.
But they were all his bait. Absolutely. I have no idea. Listen, here's another question. Why was that? If you were going to relieve Jose Quintana in the second inning, okay, in the third inning technically, of the NLCS in an elimination game, how is it that a guy who couldn't make the wild card round be the guy to come in to stop the bleeding?
Explain that to me.
Should have brought in Lackey.
Again, I was screaming, you got to get Q. Oh, it's Rondon. Maybe I'll got to get Q. Well,
yeah, we've been talking about it.
Rather than 160 days from now, I'm going to play the Miami Marlins.
No, I would have gone. I wouldn't worry about Saturday. John Lester would have gotten the ball and see what you could get from him. Now, again, you're walking into a bases loaded, nobody out situation. What are you going to do? That's what that guy can do, and I don't think we'll necessarily have to see him next year, that's fine.
It killed the rally.
That's your first freaking question?
What, in order, are the Cubs' top three items on the team's off-season to-do list?
Well, look, after watching the bullpen, we're talking about it right now. Top of the list, I don't know. I assume you have a pretty good start with the starting rotation when you have Lester and, yes, Quintana. And Kyle Hendricks, you have three guys you can count on. I got to see Mike Montgomery in the rotation, and don't stop the back and forth to the bullpen start. Just settle him, let him be a starter, back of your rotation, see how he does for a season, and go from there. Go get me one of those Chris Turner guys. All right, I mean, we go Dexter Fowler, and he went to where the money is. You got to go find yourself a legitimate leadoff top of the lineup guy. Now, they're not easily found, and they're not certainly found. I was looking at the free agent list for next year. They're not found there, certainly. So you're going to have to get creative in a trade and find a guy like, I don't know, in Cearte or someone from Atlanta, if they're even willing to talk trade for a guy like that. But it's going to cost you. But the whole 2 months with Kyle Schwarber and then Rizzo, and let's throw something at the wall and see who our leadoff guy, right down to the final games of this season, not having anything at the top of the order, that's hugely important. So if that's not one, it's certainly the bridge guys and everything else. I mean, Justin Wilson, do we just say all's forgiven and flush the second half of the season or the entirety of his Cubs career and give him the ball and hope for better next year? It's certainly either the leadoff guy in the bullpen or the bullpen and the leadoff guy, and then I'll get to my young, controllable starter to fill out my rotation.
I think it's closer first. I mean, it was the move that they made to start kind of last year's, when you knew that you were losing your closer, and then you made a move to get a closer, and now you got to make a decision on Wade Davis. You don't have to go get a closer, but you got to know whether he's the guy or not. So I would start with Wade Davis making a decision on whether you're going to offer him a contract, you want him back, what the length of it
I've made
be.
That decision. You better bring him back.
Okay, well, that hasn't been announced yet. So that would be the first decision for me. I think the starting pitching would be next on my hit list, because you got to move quickly. You got to make a decision on who you want, what you're going to do, and how you're going to go about doing it. Then I would concentrate a lot on the bullpen, and I would get to the leadoff guy last, because maybe you have options here that you haven't thought about. Maybe you could try something outside the box. I don't know. It blew up on you, but it didn't seem to be something that they blamed for the Schwarber thing at the beginning of the year. They were moving guys. Somebody, eight different guys leading off at some point or other. So I think you'd like to have that solidified. But I'd the closer thing starts it, then I'd try to worry about getting the starter, because you got to move quickly on that. And then I'd try to figure out my bullpen, and that's going to take a while. And I would, it's not that it's not a priority, but then I would get to the leadoff guy.
starting pitcher, a second starting pitcher, and I'll just put it under the umbrella of a bullpen. They don't have a fourth starter right now. They don't have a fifth starter right now. And this is a team that doesn't think, we talk about in terms of walking into a season about five starters, but they think about six, seven, and eight because you know things are going to happen during the season as far as injuries or maybe a Brett Anderson situation. Well, it's fine. He's just back into the rotation guy. And what was he? Was he here even a month? And then they sent him to the minors. Never heard from him again. As far as the bullpen decision will be interesting, these group of guys, this front office does not have a history of paying closers.
Right.
They believe that bullpen's up and down. You don't know what you're going to get. Very unpredictable going into a season. And we saw that going in within a season going into the playoffs. Guys just lost it in the last month and then it carried into the postseason. The offense was horrible. It'll go down in history as one of the worst in a playoff series. But this lineup is set with contracts and with young guys that are under control. So I really don't see any major changes. There might be tweaks in the field, but it's pitching, and that's how these playoff games are won. Pitching, pitching, pitching.
You know, there are a lot of contracts on the team that go past next season, whether it's Zobrist or Hayward or guys who are past their prime or were disappointing in terms of their
contract. Zobrist was a $75 million deal, right?
6 years,
$68 was something like that.
Or yeah, four for 72 or 68. 70,
okay.
Yeah,
it's around the high 60, low 70 range. He looks done and dusted as an everyday player, certainly. He might be a very high-paid utility guy for next season. I think.
Did you say Hayward's past his prime?
Apparently, I mean, I'm not trying 29? To be facetious here. He's 29 yeah. years old, but he doesn't look anything like the player he was even 3 years ago in St. Louis. So I don't want to completely declare him done and dusted. But after the last two seasons, you have to ask questions whether he's a viable guy to play 162 games a
year.
Well,
you bench a guy twice at the end of your playoffs.
Yeah. That 2 years in a row, he couldn't even get on the field
in
the playoffs. That
tells you that you could carry him right to the point where you couldn't.
You know, I think outside of Rizzo and Bryant, you don't have many guys on this roster who are high on base guys. Baez, Russell, not high on base guys. Almora, not a high on base guy. Schwarber, clearly not a high on base guy. And that's kind of what Theo's mentality is get guys that get on base. So I think the number one priority is to get a guy who can get on base so you don't have Bryant, driving in only 60 runs in a season or something like that.
Yeah,
set the table for these big boppers.
He had 13 home runs and how many RBI to start the season? They're all solo home runs, right?
So I think that would be the number one priority for me is to get a high on base guy at the top of your order. Bullpen would be my second shopping list item, I guess you could say, because Wade Davis, you don't know when if he's going to be back at all. Justin Wilson, big question mark. Carl Edwards, now a question mark, who you thought would be a piece of this bullpen going forward for many years. You don't know what the hell's going on in his head or what you're going to get from him. And third, which is crazy to put starting pitching at third, but you're going to lose at least 2/3 of your rotation in Arrieta and Lackey. You're going to need to restock those coffers as well.
I know we had fun with it last year, and we'll probably have more fun with it after I make my comment here. But, you know, anybody want to argue that Dexter Fowler wasn't the most important player on the Cubs last year?
They were flat out wrong in their decision.
Right.
They underestimated the value of a leadoff hitter.
And they lost the leadership of a David Ross that I think they desperately needed. So to lose a guy that kept that clubhouse so loose and did so much at the top of the lineup, and to lose Ross, I think that double loss of those two guys had a huge impact. Rizzo, I like Anthony Rizzo. I like him a lot, but he's just not that guy like a Ross or like a Fowler to keep things so loose. They are so desperate for a table setter. Kevin laid out all the facts. I also agree with Joe. They are so desperate for, and they've got a lot of players that the season is so long, right? I mean, it's 100. They've got a lot of players that are going to get you right there, especially in a crap division. That's not the Cubs' fault that they're in a crap division. So they're going to be right there again in 18 as long as they're healthy. But to get past the good teams, you got to have guys that can do it in the postseason. They don't have those guys. They need to find those guys. And I almost feel like Wednesday or Thursday of next week, I think I'm going to feel that the way they were eliminated, they got their asses kicked. Okay, I mean, they won 3-2 the other night. Whipty frickin' do. They could only score runs with a home. I think Theo and Jed are going to be so red-assed and they can't make massive turnover, but they're going to be motivated more than ever. Like if they would have, if you lost in a game seven against the Dodgers, and you think, you know, we can, you know, if we would have just started off the season,
but who are you trading, Preston? Well, maybe give me a name of someone with trade value.
Ian Happ. So you have some trade value?
Yes,
Schwarber, Happ. Okay. What do you want? What do you want exactly?
Ian Happ might go get you a table setter.
Maybe. You don't want, Joe, is to trade guys that aren't the right guys to trade. Right? You see what I'm saying? You don't want to be, because you're stuck with a contract of Hayward, making other decisions and being stuck with a guy that is overpaid because you signed a bad deal. That's what infuriates people with baseball teams. And that's what ruins baseball teams. When you have so much money invested that you can't move a guy, so you move another guy who might be a better player ultimately than the guy
right.
you can't
But Hayward
move.
Can get you through that 162-game grind and help you win a couple of games.
I was just saying he had a bad playoff, and I was
But here's the deal. That contract can't, more importantly, can't be...
Oh, it can't be moved.
No, it can't be moved, certainly, but it can't be the reason you don't spend more money.
Right.
You've got to spend money. Right. I mean, you can argue whether Schwarber's at... You're selling high or low on a guy like that, but now you can't say, if your ownership, well, we just spent $184 million 2 years ago on this guy... We can't go spend.
And you can't say, well, you know what? We're going to spend $400 million on Chris Bryant in a few years, so we got to watch our contract.
I mean, did Dexter, right. That's how you get in trouble. The decision not to pay Dexter Fowler come in part because the $184 million going out the door for Jason Hayward?
Honest to God, at the time, I thought it had to do with Elmora being ready to play center field, and they
Joe,
never played.
No, Joe no, does still, so that, still doesn't that, believe
that
that's
confused
the case.
Me.
I'd like not to answer any personal questions, but if you have any baseball questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Does Joe Maddon deserve any blame for 2017?
There's plenty of blame to go around. I would say that Joe is not without fault, but I don't think... I think that Joe is underappreciated. I think it was a really difficult job. I think that he's done a really good job of getting them to this point, and I think that... You know, his in-game decisions are what people criticize, rightly so. There's plenty of mistakes that he's made. Again, his reputation was damaged by winning a World Series. Go figure that out, but that's actually what happened. And I believe rightfully so. I mean, I think he made a lot of wacky and crazy things. And if he hadn't won, that's the guy you'd be pointing a finger at. But, you know, you got a team that doesn't have a bullpen or that whose bullpen wore out, whatever. And you got a team that has guys not hitting. Now, it was interesting. I heard Pedro say in the pregame that the problem with Joe is that he moves all these guys around, and that when he watches that team, they're all exhausted. It's not one or two guys. He's exhausted everybody, which would be antithetical to what he was
trying
to
get done. Yeah,
exactly.
Now he's talking about platooning more in April and May because he thinks that's the answer to resting guys.
Yeah, I don't know, but they clearly that bullpen was had nothing left in the tank, and you know the other thing is just, and I don't know whose decision it was, but look at the people that they kept on the roster. You know, like John Lackey. What were they thinking? Why not keep another arm in the bullpen instead of a position player that you didn't need? They just seem to make some weird decisions ultimately. You know, the Dodgers had more guys in their bullpen, right? They had more bodies, and obviously they were better. But, I think that Joe has a certain amount of culpability, but I wouldn't think that he damaged his reputation any more than it was.
Does he deserve any blame? Certainly. Criticism, yes. Games one and two. Now, in retrospect, and I know it's too soon, Dustin, for some, but, I mean, if you look at it, even if he got every decision right in those first couple games and you split in L.A., looking at it realistically, objectively, were they going to beat the Dodgers? No, they might have gotten to 6-7. They might have gotten to game seven, but back in L.A., you would have to like the Dodgers' chances with the pitching they had and certainly the lineup they had. So it could have been a much more interesting series. I don't get Chris Bryant and Rizzo absolutely going 0-for for the playoff series. I mean, what does Joe have to do with that? I mean, he moved him down the lineup in the one win. So, you know, he had his best game managing when they actually won a game and he got thrown out.
Chris Bryant looked trollixed.
Yeah.
Absolutely wrecked.
And to Dustin's point, that's not a guy who's going to keep anyone loose in the clubhouse either. That's not Chris Bryant. He just goes out there and leads by example when he's on. So Yeah, everyone deserves some criticism when you get your butt kicked in five games like this and basically don't even show up. But that said, you know, you have to look at Joe's, just like Theo and Jed changed the entirety of the organization from the studs, you know, took it down to the studs and rebuilt it. Joe changed the culture. From the last 3 years, they don't happen without Joe Madden being here, being the positive guy, the rah-rah guy, the player's manager, and all the criticism and everything we gave him, even last year when they won the World Series. Like you said, Mully, his reputation was actually damaged for winning a World Series and for a team that hadn't done it in 108 years. So, yes, he deserves blame, but that's not why they lost to the Dodgers. I mean, they just weren't good enough. And you know, a lot of guys should look in the mirror, and the biggest moments of their careers short of the World Series, they were MIA. And I don't know how the manager goes out there and grabs a bat and tries to get 3-for-4 and, you know, three or four RBI from a guy who wants every couple games. I mean, Rizzo and Bryant, they didn't show up, and the team got what it got.
No, Joe Madden does not deserve any blame for how the season ended. This was all about the players failing to execute at the plate, on the mound, in the field. All three facets. We saw it all in these five games, the struggles everywhere. So that is strictly on the players. However, I will say, and we've all talked about it, we've had issues with Madden in this series. And moving forward, it's just something to keep in your mind. Had issues with him last year in the playoffs. Joe Madden's probably going to get outmanaged unless he's going up against Dusty Baker. Now, is that going to give you a loss? I have no idea. It depends how a series plays out. Theo had his back yesterday saying it's not manager against manager. Yeah, and that five-year contract probably had something to do with it. But Madden is a great regular season manager. I've had issues in just about every playoff series with him.
Certainly a lot of issues that you could bring up, individual moments throughout the playoffs last year, the playoffs this year, and everything is magnified in the postseason. But I think over 162 games, you're probably not going to find a better manager, because over that period of time, things, I don't want to say work a little bit more automatically, but certainly guys are in more of a routine. Maybe not so much on Joe Madden teams when guys are in and out of the lineup changing positions almost every single day. But in terms of pitching, starters know when they're going. Bullpen guys know their roles to a certain extent. So for 162 games, I think he's a good manager. But when it comes playoff time, he does certainly overthink things a little bit. You can point to a few specifics this year in particular. I don't really think that mattered, though. I think the Dodgers were just so much better than the Cubs. You can't really blame Joe for this series loss. So he deserves blame because he's the manager of the team, and he deserves praise when they win, and he deserves blame when they lose. But I think that some of the derision and vitriol directed toward him might be a little excessive. The team, they didn't hit. That's it right there. They did not hit at all.
It's not Joe's fault that they didn't hit, but I'm still just so curious how these pitching decisions in the game are set up. Is this Bosio giving him a nudge? Is he asking Bosio? Is this completely on Joe? How in the world? How did Hector get in the game in the third inning? How did that? Whose idea was that? I said that, you talk about putting people in positions that they've never been in. When's the last time Hector pitched in a game in the third inning? And he came into the game with the bases loaded in the third inning. I know he came into a game with the bases loaded.
I think they just thought he has the freshest arm. I think
you're probably right. That's what makes sense.
Because he wasn't on the roster for the last
round. Exactly. That's all it was. Well, you know.
And he tried to outsmart us all and say, well, that was the plan, right?
And maybe
we saved Hector for round
everyone,
two.
The idea that Lester is Quintana, the older version of Quintana, you didn't want to bring out Lester to this lineup as they just beat up on Quintana. You don't have more of the same, just an older version of it.
And it's all hindsight, but who came in after Hector? Lackey. I'd have said to John Lackey, John, this is your last stand here, all right? If we need you tonight, a separate conversation. This is Madden and or Bosio, or the two of them going to him and saying, if we need you tonight, you got it?
Do you think Lackey could pitch next year if he wanted to?
If he wants. But again, Lackey's the guy. Lackey's a guy that in a course of 100 and, yes,
he might be the fifth starter.
He could be the fifth starter next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he likes it enough to come back. I don't know.
No, they're not bringing him back.
Oh, I don't think they'll bring him back. But he could.
Well, you got Bartolo Colon, you're not bringing Jake Arrieta back.
Bartolo Colon, 44?
Jake Arrieta might be back, guys.
Well, that's not John Lackey.
Why would that happen, Dustin?
You guys are missing the main one.
Yes.
Ohtani.
Oh, well.
That would change things.
Yeah, well, we'll see the commitment then, won't we?
You can play left field, too.
Yes.
He can play left field.
He's in for Hayward when he's not pitching.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he wind up in the American League? Because he wants to hit.
Probably the Yankees, I would think.
Yeah, he wants to hit, right?
So, mm-hmm.
DH.
I mean, that's a good question.
I'd trade Schwarber out for that.
Send Schwarber to Japan. Big in Japan.
If Schwarber could pitch, I mean, that...
Who's more likely to be back with the Cubs, Jake Arrieta or Wade Davis?
See, now, this goes back to your shopping list. It's only money. You have to bring Wade Davis back. Carl Edwards is not ready for the job. Now, Theo talked about how much they believe still in Carl Edwards. He's still 28? I get all that. He's certainly a part of this moving forward. But I don't just hand him the ball next year and say, you're our closer. Because you might not get to the playoffs if that's the case. We saw too much inconsistency from him late in the season and into the playoffs. Wade Davis, somewhere between what Melanson got and what Chapman got is what you're going to have to pay Wade Davis. So you're going to be sitting there looking at 4 or 5 years, and I get it, 16, 17, 15 million, whatever the number is. That's what the cost of playing poker is when it comes to closers. I don't know how this team has plenty of cash and more is coming with the hotel across the street and everything else. There is no salary cap. Okay. There's a luxury tax, but you have money coming off the books and Lackey and likely Arrieta. To answer the question, Wade Davis better be back. And Jake, you can make a case if Jake wants to play ball with him and there's some happy medium to be found there and you could get creative and have an opt out and make Jake happy with more money than he's going to get. At least in the short term versus a long-term deal if he wants to be part of this thing. But you make the argument that they can't afford Wade Davis. They can certainly afford him because it's all only cash, and he's, what, 33? Everyone talked
32.
About... 32. 32, even better. And, you know, talked about how his quiet confidence and, you know, this assassin type and how he goes about his business. He better be back, and whatever the cost is, you've got the money, and you just get the checkbook and sign it.
Yeah. You know, I think Wade Davis is more likely to be back than Jake, but I don't know that either is coming back. I think that it comes down to years more than anything else, and I think they have the money, and I just think that they don't want to commit it long-term for reasons we talked about earlier. So I think Wade Davis could come back on a shorter contract. I think Jake wants years, and I think that's the great disconnect between the organization and Jake Arrieta. And I also think that this is Jake's chance to cash. This is kind of his
only chance.
That's what I'm saying. This is it. He's got to hit this one out of the park. And who did we decide? You, Darvish, the only guy that might be more popular on the free agent market than Jake. And that's a might be. So I think that Jake is gone because the priority for him at this point in his life, his family, everything else, is got to be money. And I think he's taking the best deal that's offered to him. And I think Wade Davis might be a little bit different. You might be able to. But, frankly, I'm not sure either's coming back.
Yeah. Wade Davis is the guy here. Jake's gone. He's looking for his big payday. But Mark Melanson, as Brian mentioned, that's the contract to look at. He got from San Francisco 4 years, $62 million, same age. So that's really what you're going to look at. Arrieta would cost, I don't know, somewhere between $100, $150 million. And the other closers out there, in addition to Davis, it's either Greg Holland, who had a 3.61 ERA at 41 saves, but a 3.61 ERA, or Fernando Rodney of the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's the list. So, I mean, a year ago, it was you gave up Soler for him, and this time it would be giving up money.
They are 10th in payroll right now, and Brian, you mentioned with all the money they bring in, that needs to be a little bit higher. I'm not saying you need to have a payroll like the Dodgers, close to $300 million, but it needs to be well over 200, closer to 225, I would say. You need to get up into that top five of payroll because you're making so much money you can afford to do that. So by that, I think they will bring Wade Davis back. Jake, I don't see him being back here. He's declined so much year to year in the last 3 years. They can see that pattern, and I think he's going to be gone.
If I was my money, Jake Arrieta would be the one who I'd take over Wade Davis.
Which part of that question should I answer first?
What is your prediction for Bears-Panthers Sunday at Soldier Field?
I think the Panthers win the game, and I think the Bears, what is the over-under? It could be
the total?
Yeah, like 48? 48.
It's so, pretty high.
Yeah, I think the Bears are going to lose pretty significantly. I think they've covered four games this year, and I just think, here's what I think. I think the Bears went on the road and won a game, and Carolina knows that. I think they're a better team than the Ravens, and they're going to come in here and win.
Yeah, the line is 3, so everyone's in love with the Bears after beating Baltimore. I'm not sharing the love necessarily, so I'd say they lose 7 to 10 points to the Carolinas.
The Bears have covered all 3 games at home, yep. And I think that's part of the reason they're field goal favorites. In those other games, it was much closer to 6 or 7, aside from the Minnesota game. I think this is very comparable to the Vikings game. You're going against a defense that is very good against the run, and that's your strength offensively, and that's what they're going to keep going to. I think the Panthers win, but the Bears do keep it close.
I fell into the trap last time of picking the Bears after they won a game. I'm not going to do it again. Carolina's pretty good. Carolina's going to win.
24-10, Panthers.
Boy, now I want to go against all of us. That's the 5 and 5. We got David Hawnax, Molly and Haley on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.